It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State Livestock Economist. Let's talk reference prices in the new farm bill. Lots of questions moving forward. Senator John Bozeman, ranking member, Senate Ag Committee.
Well, I've had the opportunity to be, I think, in 20 states or so doing listening sessions, and we've had countless hearings up here in Washington, also countless meetings in our offices, and all of the risk management tools come up immediately. Crop insurance is the basis of that, but always reference prices, making PLC work, making ARC work, making crop insurance work, it all goes together. And that's certainly, I think, one of the things that, you know, it's important to me because it's important to the farm community.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Dr. Darrell Peel. Darrell is an Oklahoma State Livestock Economist. We're at CattleCon 24 in Orlando. Darrell, great to see you.
It's good to see you, too. It's great to be here.
Okay. Interesting time, really, when you think of where the cattle industry is today. Much different place than we've been in the last 20 years. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, in terms of, I mean, we talk about the cattle cycle, and yes, you can paint this in the, as a part of a cycle, but we know that 10 years ago we had a low that was driven by drought, so it was an exaggerated low, if you will. We're in that even more so now. Obviously, drought is the reason why we've liquidated so hard the last, now 3 years. And so, it is an unusual time. And if you just want, you know, if you want superlatives, I mean, the beef cow herd, given what USDA has told us in these new numbers, is the smallest since 1961, and the total cattle inventory in the U.S. is the smallest since 1951. So we haven't been this small in a long, long time in this industry.
So obviously some of this will be weather-related. Are there other factors that we're seeing into these numbers? Just fewer operators? I mean, is there more to it than just drought?
Well, I think drought is the major driver of how we got here. But I think there's a number of other factors that play into sort of where do we go from here, or how fast are we going to go somewhere different. I think we're smaller than we need to be. I mean, beef production is going to decline again in 2024 and probably 2025. The market will make use of that. We'll probably wind up pricing a smaller supply even higher, but it means some people won't eat as much beef because we won't have as much beef. So I say all that to say that I think, you know, broadly speaking, we're smaller than we need to be as an industry. There's plenty of market support out there for us to be a bigger industry. So I think we are going to try to rebuild when we get a chance. But that process is going to play out a little bit different, I think, from this point on, just given where we are and how we got here.
Okay, here's what's kind of interesting. Some of the areas that were in deep drought 10 years ago are not in that deep drought that we saw 10 years ago. We're seeing, and I'm using this probably just driving by at 75, but I'm seeing cattle in places grazing that I haven't seen in probably 10 years. Is that just me?
Well, you know, one of the differences this time from 10 years ago, and I think this comparison to that last situation is very valid because it's very strong in producers' minds, and I think it has a lot to do with how their expectations are forming. And that drought, as you said, was so centered in the southern plains, Texas, Oklahoma, and spilling out around the edges of that. It drove the national numbers, but it was very confined. And as a result of that, the rest of the industry actually was poised to sort of recoup from that much quicker. This drought, you know, it's moved around, and long-term droughts tend to do that. So it's really started in 2020. 2021 was mostly in the northern plains. 2022, it moved back in the central plains and southern plains. 2023, it was kind of all over the place. At the end of 2023, it was in the Delta region pretty seriously and still is to some extent. So I say all that to say that I think this last several years has affected a lot wider set of producers. And so it's a different process to recover from that than when a few producers are more severely impacted. This is a much broader based kind of an impact, and it's going to be a little bit broader based process to recover from.
So we could probably see some rebuilding in certain areas, but maybe not widespread, which brings up the question, can we start rebuilding?
You know, the way I've been looking at the numbers for a while, and I'll rerun them with these new USDA numbers, but I don't think it's going to change very much. Looks to me like the best we can hope for in 2024 would be to sort of hold stable. Stop liquidating, so stop getting smaller. That's good. And in fact, that's not uncommon. If you look at cattle cycles historically, they kind of have a flat spot on the bottom. They typically have a flat bottom there where there'll be 2 years that aren't very much different, and then you start regrowing. But the way I look at it, this time, 2024, flat to, and depending on what drought does, could continue liquidation, but the best we could hope for would be flat. Limited potential to growth and to grow in 2025. So I think we're talking about an extended process before we could really ramp up to a faster pace of expansion.
Sometimes we talk about the word impulse, and we think of it from a buying perspective. But when we look at the cattle industry, can we use impulse in a little different way?
You know, if you dig into the heifer data that we have, and really it's more recent, for about 22 or 3 years now, USDA has been giving us, within that replacement heifer number we get every year, they've been giving us a breakout of the subset of those heifers that are bred. And what becomes important there is you can say, well, those are 2-year-old heifers, coming 2-year-old heifers, right? So they're from the calf crop 2 years ago. And then if you subtract the bred heifers from the total, what's left are heifers that we're calling replacements, but they're heifer calves from last year's calf crop. So we're working with two different sets of heifers here. And I say all that to say that when you start trying to follow through time those different sets of heifers, and then you look at how many heifers are going to calve this year versus how many we said we were keeping to breed last year, it's obvious in the data that what happens is that there's a fair number of producers that didn't call them replacement heifers, but we have feeder heifers or stocker heifers out in the country, and they wind up getting bred. And so I call it impulse heifer breeding as opposed to the ones that were planned going into the thing. And I've been digging into this data a lot more because I'm very interested in this process of how we're going to recover from the current situation. And what I find is that typically, or at least in the last cattle cycle, there was a big jump in that impulse breeding in the early stages of expansion. The guys that were planning to breed were slowly building their heifer inventories, but a bunch of other guys jumped on the bandwagon to facilitate that more rapid herd expansion. And then those were the ones that quit doing it at the top. So they were, you know, I say all that to say that I think what we're going to see here, the USDA data tells us we're not bringing very many bred heifers or heifer calves into 2024. But what we might see if expectations change and if Mother Nature facilitates a better prospect for us, we might see a sizable jump in this impulse breeding where a lot of heifers that are out there right now that they're stockers or they're feeder cattle or maybe not spoken for yet, and they might wind up getting into the breeding pool. And so that would be the place where we could start this quicker.
Very interesting. So I can't wait to find out more of your data along the way. You look at 24, and again, you've already kind of summarized, you know, what you think is coming. Is there anything else we need to keep an eye on? Maybe imports? Maybe the export picture? Is there anything else we just need to glance over at?
Well, you know, the imports and exports started in 2023 to behave as I would expect, honestly, in the current market conditions. I mean, we had record beef exports in 2022, And we expected in 2023 they would start to fall, and they did. But we're in a tighter beef supply situation. Prices are higher. And on top of that, we've had a strong dollar most of the time. So those are three headwinds for exports. By the same token, as beef production falls in the U.S., and particularly as cull cow slaughter drops, when we don't have to liquidate and try not to to cull as many cows, that's one of the bases for stopping liquidation, then our processing beef that supports our ground beef market that's so important in the U.S., and so that becomes much more attractive. Prices are higher, so we start importing more beef. And we're seeing that. I think it'll probably continue as we go forward. It doesn't change. I mean, none of those are – they're at the margin. So none of those are changes that overwhelm or offset what's going to happen in the U.S. industry. But they modify it a little bit around the edges in terms of, and it really comes down to how much our consumers impacted. If we import a little more beef, then there's a little bit less pain for consumers with reduced beef production in the U.S. If we export a little less, we keep a little bit more of what we are producing that's smaller in the domestic market. So it's really moderating it from a consumer standpoint as much as anything.
Darrell, so great to see you. Thanks for your time, and we wish you the best.
Thank you. It's good to visit with you.
Again, Dr. Darrell Peel, Oklahoma State Livestock Economist, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. What about a new farm bill? Dr. John Bozeman is a senator from Arkansas, ranking member on the Senate Ag Committee.
Again, we're just in a really kind of a generational change right now because of inflation, the high interest rates, all of those kind of things, high input cost, and then as everybody I've talked to has said that probably commodity prices are going to go down. So that's, those are warning signs for our farmers. What we've got to do in the farm bill is make sure that we give them the risk management tools to handle all of that. And so it's complicated. And then we've had all of the things that have gone on in the House. We've had trouble passing our appropriations bill. So there's been a lot of things. A lot of priority things that have come up that simply have to be passed. We were blessed. We were able to get an extension without any problems at all. That was, everybody working together. I was really pleased with that. I know that Senator Stabenow also was very pleased with the effort that was made in that regard. So our farmers are in good shape through the, till the end of the year. But we've got to give them the certainty that they need going forward.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Special guest, Oklahoma State livestock economist, Darrell Peel.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
A new addition to a national advisory board, providing input on decision-making with USDA's research, extension, education, and economics realm.
The pollinator subcommittee is going to help us as we work to identify the collective set of stressors that impact pollinators, including but not limited to pests and pathogens, pollinator habitat, and climate change, to name a few. And so this subcommittee is going to play a very important role to help us identify the research priorities to support pollinator health and help us focus on the best available science to inform our pollinator programmatic and policy needs.
Undersecretary Shavonda Jacobs-Young says the 9-member pollinator subcommittee, consisting of private, public, and academic experts, will meet on a regular schedule virtually to discuss research priorities and best science practices associated with pollinator health and conservation. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.